Secrets of the Sire.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Secrets of the Sire. We do this every Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, on the Sire Studios Digital Network. We talk comics, movies, TV, and pop culture. Tonight, we close out our final four for MCU March Movie Madness, the most important movies you need to see before Avengers Endgame. We rank them bracket style. We go spinning the racks like we do every single week, and we welcome best-selling author Amanda Rose to the show. I'm your host, Michael Dolce, and as always, I am joined by my cohort in crime, the Lord of the Radio himself, Mr. Hassan Godwin. How you doing, sir?
I'm good.
I'm good this week.
It's
as best an intro as I can get, right?
Here's the problem with I never know how to answer that question. And it's not like I don't know how I am. It's just everything I say sounds like cheesy. Like, I'm great, Mike. How's it going? So I always want to be positive, but it always comes out like,
It is literally a filler question too, by the way.
I say it
and I don't even care how you are.
Yeah, you don't even care.
It's just how I introduce you. So I think that's amazing and awesome. All right. We last week, to recap and take up all the time talking, because that's what I do.
Yes. You go. I'm gonna get a snack.
We did our Avengers Endgame. We started with 16 out of the 21 MCU films. We seeded them based on their Metacritic score. However, the bracket itself is all about which film is the most important that you need to see before Avengers Endgame, which debuts this month, because we are now in April. So at the end of this month, it is going to debut. So the list that we got down to had some controversy last week. First of all, we left it up to you, the voters, to go onto our Twitter page, twitter.com/sire_studios, and vote for the four in each bracket to advance. So we had the Pat Shan bracket, we had the Darren Sanchez bracket, we had the Starlet Runner bracket, and we had the Adultish podcast and web series bracket. We had a number of different participants in these brackets, a number of different movies. We seeded it according to this. You can go to secretsofthesire.com. You can go to sirestudiosinc.com, and you can check out the bracket. Or if you're streaming us on facebook.com/secretsofthesire right now, I'm showing you the bracket. If you're checking us on youtube.com/secretsofthesire, I'm showing you the bracket. And if you're watching us on twitter.com/sire_studios, there's the bracket. It's there for you. There for your enjoyment right now. You could see the big upsets. We had our final 14 was Avengers in the Pat Shan bracket. We had Captain Marvel upsetting both Black Panther and Thor Ragnarok. Because, again, the criteria for this was most important films to see before you see Avengers Endgame. In the Darren Sanchez bracket, Doctor Strange, a 3-seed, upset both Civil War and upset Spider-Man Homecoming to make it there. And then finally, we had Winter Soldier. Now, this is the biggest upset to me, even though it was not technically an upset because they were a number 1 seed, out of the Starlight Runner bracket, getting into the final four. I want to start with this one because this one, to me, this final matchup before we get to the finals, which we will also do today because, well, final four time is over. We got Shazam to review next week. We've got Hellboy to review in 2 weeks. We've got actual movies to go into in the next couple shows. So we're going to get done with this today. Hassan, Winter Soldier versus Doctor Strange. Can you make any argument that Winter Soldier should advance based on importance to leading up to Avengers Endgame?
No. No, I cannot. We need Doctor Strange. You need a Doctor Strange established because Doctor Strange plays a very big part of Infinity War.
Yeah.
And we're in the end game with his last words to Stark, which means that he's pretty much set up the scenario for whatever we're about to go through in this next movie. But without Doctor Strange, we probably couldn't have been there. So we need Doctor Strange. It's a more important movie than The Winter Soldier.
And here's the other thing too, right? Winter Soldier, at least if he had survived the finger snap, you could sit there and say, well, right then and there, that's why he's more important. And the other thing about Winter Soldier, it's named Winter Soldier. Do you even think of it as a Captain America movie? Is there some relevance to Captain America, because Captain America did survive the finger snap, that we could argue makes this vital for us?
No, not really, because the other big thing was that S.H.I.E.L.D. ended, but S.H.I.E.L.D. came back. Well, it didn't end, but S.H.I.E.L.D. was very damaged from it.
Yes.
S.H.I.E.L.D. came back.
Mm-hmm. It was damaged.
And we met Falcon, but Falcon also died.
Right.
In the snap. So, no, not really. I mean, aside from me loving that film, it's not really.
I know. And that's the thing that comes down to it. That's what makes this interesting. I have regrets about this bracket. I have regrets that we didn't just do a straightforward, let's rank the Marvel films and bracket it out and see which one wins. So yeah. I'll be honest with you. Winter Soldier, not even close to my top three of films.
Yeah, but you're wrong. You know, that's all.
But the point is, I would have argued for it not to advance based on the merit of it as a film versus based on the merit of it being important to Avengers Endgame.
And you would have lost. But in this particular situation, I have to agree with you. So you win. Yay, Michael Dolce.
So we're not even going to worry about it. We're gonna advance Doctor Strange in this bracket unless we can think of something. I mean, I want to give it its just thought before we just declare it a blowout. But I just can't. I mean, no, Doctor Strange is also a victim of the finger snap, so it's not as if he is going to play that pivotal role until probably the very end. But he did. I mean, he is one of the most powerful figures in the Marvel Universe. He can control the Time Stone. He has controlled that before. He did utter those words to Tony that this was the way it had to go.
He brought the Hulk. He didn't bring the Hulk back, but he brought the Hulk back into the fold by introducing him to Tony Stark. He helped Tony with the first battle. He got captured because he had one of the Infinity Stones. He fought Thanos almost single-handedly.
Yeah,
for quite a while.
Yeah,
and held out, and like I said, he was the one who, pretty much as we
I know.
Conceive it, mm-hmm. he's the one who conceived this final end game. So we need him.
There you go, folks. I can't sum it up any better than that. And unfortunately for all you
Winter Soldier's way better though. That's
Doctor Strange will advance. Yeah, there it goes. All right.
Whatever.
In the other bracket, now this becomes interesting too. So Captain Marvel advanced past Black Panther based on fan voting, because I actually would have argued Black Panther is just as important, even though he also got wiped out.
Yeah.
However, his sister is possibly still alive, and we know Michonne is still alive. So there is some relevance. But plus, everything took place in Wakanda. I think it's going to have some sort of impact going forward as well, too, in Avengers Endgame. So it would have been very impactful. Thor Ragnarok, to me, didn't do anything that Guardians of the Galaxy didn't do first. So I'm okay with it being beaten by Captain Marvel. Captain Marvel's a film, though. I would definitely rank below both Thor Ragnarok and Black Panther. Black Panther, substantially. Black Panther's in my top three. Captain Marvel is not even close to that. Thor Ragnarok is probably in my top 10. Not that high up on the list, but thoroughly enjoyable movie. So, yes, in terms of actual movie, Captain Marvel should not have advanced, but she did because she's Captain Marvel, and we are going to be taking on Thanos, and she is the hidden, secret weapon, I guess, so to speak. I mean, she can do
maybe
that other people can't. We've saw her movie. She's got this boundless power. She can directly impact the endgame, whereas Thor Ragnarok, Thor is in it, but you know, Thor 1 versus Thor 3, there's nothing in it that's of more value at this point. Avengers, the movie, though, you made a great argument last week. There is no Avengers Endgame without Avengers, right?
No.
This is the powerhouse matchup to me. I think this is one of those that, spoilers, is probably going to win the tournament because I can't think of two more important films But which do you think is more important to Avengers Endgame that you have to see before you see Avengers Endgame and will have the most direct impact?
Oh, what are the choices again? I'm sorry.
Avengers versus Captain Marvel. You don't even listen to me, do you? You just tune me out.
No, I tune you out. I totally tune you out.
Understood. At least you admit it. That's good.
Which is more important? Avengers.
How come?
Okay, Avengers is established. Is the establishment of the entire universe. It's the establishment of Thanos. It's the establishment of Loki. It's the establishment of the Tesseract. It's the establishment of the group Earth's Mightiest Heroes. It's the establishment of why Thor is on Earth occasionally. Why the Hulk is a part of the Avengers.
Couldn't you argue though?
I'm not done.
But no, all right. But I want to. All right, I want to address that point though. Couldn't you argue though that the establishment of the Avengers is actually in Captain Marvel?
No.
Because Nick Fury literally creates the Avengers protocol.
You could argue that the establishment of the Avengers is in Captain America because he was first Avenger.
That's probably my favorite of all the movies, probably top three, easily top three. And
yeah, you're wrong, but yeah, I get you.
I think the first Captain America has much more importance. It should have upset Winter Soldier to begin with, but we didn't leave it up to us to do it. We left it to the fans.
And the fans have spoken, Mr. Yeah. Dolce.
I feel as if we should have advanced Infinity War. If you went onto Apple Podcasts or you're on Google Play or if you're on any of wherever you download podcasts and you download last week's episode, there was a trial going on within myself as to whether we should have advanced Winter Soldier or Infinity War, because I think Infinity War, overall, we should have actually advanced that. Looking back, I regret that highly. I think Infinity War would have made an amazing final game. Infinity War was Duke, all right, for all you sports fans that don't listen to our show, but you're out there. I know there's a handful. Infinity War was our Duke, who was predicted to go all the way and got bounced before the Final Four to Winter Soldier, which is like our Michigan State. It's amazing how this actually did all work out. All right, great.
You didn't bring up the importance of the correlation to Endgame until halfway through the round, or else Infinity War would have probably won.
But no, I brought it up. We went back. We did. We went back. You kiboshed it. You put the kibosh on.
I did. Oh, you actually listened to that. That's amazing. Because that never happens. But okay. All right. Whenever something happens badly, now yeah. It was my influence that made it happen. But okay. All right. No.
The only thing it didn't do, which was bad though, is it correlates to the actual Final Four now. So this is good. Infinity War was our Duke. Yes, it worked out really well.
Right. Right. Okay.
Getting back to Avengers versus Captain Marvel though, which should advance?
Avengers.
We're at a stalemate right now. I think Captain Marvel is actually more important because of everything that. Now, who am I kidding? I just can't do it. I can't do it. I can't vote for it.
Because her name, her call sign was Avenger.
Yeah.
No. No.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And the fact that she has not been in the Marvel Cinematic Universe from 1995 to now. Okay.
Yeah.
And now and she's going to be called back in Endgame.
Yeah.
Means the only reason for Captain Marvel to exist is so that we're not sitting in Endgame going, who the hell is this? And how does Fury know her? And you know, whatever. We were granted that backstory so that we could be on the same page, but that backstory is not essential to Endgame.
How much would that help or hurt your opinion of Avengers Endgame if she is more than just a supporting character in this? I know when Jeff Gomez was on our show a few weeks ago, he was like, we want to see our boys, our original boys, Scarlett Johansson's character, Black Widow, also included as one of our boys, so to speak, be the ones that topple Thanos, that win at the end of the day. You know, does it help or hurt if Captain Marvel proves to be more than just the way I'm envisioning her is being the device that gets them in position to then revert time and revert the, you know, what had happened into something different. I kind of picture her as the vehicle, but not the driver. That the second half of the movie will be our, you know, original Avengers being the driver. I mean, would it hurt your opinion if she was more than just the vehicle?
No, not really.
Because she was just introduced out of nowhere? Not because she's a woman or anything like that. I'm not asking about that kind of stuff. I'm asking about the late entry into the game, so to speak.
No, not really.
You're okay. So you're okay with the fact that he blipped her on the beeper. Now we had the movie. The one movie was sufficient enough to arm her for the second act, or the third act, so to speak, which is going to be...
It's not a popularity contest with me. Like, it's a story. Mm-hmm. I just want to see how they...
I'm asking you from a story. I'm asking you from a story perspective.
I know. I'm explaining it to you. Okay. It's just a story. I want to see how the story is wrapped up.
Okay.
And if they wrap it up well, I don't really need a particular hero to be more or less important.
Right.
You know, in order for me to feel very satisfied.
Right.
It's not like... I'm not going to mention that, but it's
Bing.
I'm not getting into the other discussion I almost got into.
Are you a Gwen Stefani fan?
Yes. Who isn't a Gwen Stefani fan?
I actually don't have a problem with it either. I know some people were kind of complaining that if she has more of an impactful role in Avengers Endgame, that it's almost like a cheat in a way, you know, kind of like this secret weapon that kind of came out of nowhere as opposed to all the other films that were building up to this. But I'm okay with it. Like I said, as long as it makes sense.
For a fact, the other Avengers are going to be pivotal. They might not be the ones that land the fight. I mean, come on, look at Infinity War.
Yeah.
Who's out of all of the characters?
Right.
The only person to land the blow was Thor.
Right.
Nobody complained about that. I mean, he was a build-up, but I mean, no one complained that Captain Marvel and War Machine and mm-hmm. Hulk and all these other characters were rendered useless.
Right.
In comparison, and even Thor blew it because he didn't go for the head. he got that close and still didn't do it. Now,
if he had his full head of hair, he would have done.
He would have gone for that.
Yeah.
I see you copied my beard. I think, you know, and I thought that was great because, I mean, Thor was thoroughly, thoroughly neutered in the very beginning of this, you know, story. So the fact that he kind of had it, he's the only one really with an arc in the entire film.
Sure.
Because he was defeated and
Thanos rose.
No, Thanos didn't really have an arc. Because Thanos started here, and he ended here, but with Infinity Stones.
He had to decide whether killing someone he loved would justify.
Really, was not a decision for him. It really wasn't, because his mission was so important that he didn't hesitate to do it.
He hesitated. That's what I'm saying. He thought about it.
No, he was upset he had to do it, but he was upset because he knew he was going to do it.
Okay.
He knew he was going to do it. If he hesitated, he wouldn't have been crying right away.
Right.
Because he knew right away, like, oh, damn, I gotta kill Gamora. Oh, shame.
Yeah.
I'll get over it. And he could have come back with a snap. But,
yeah.
You know, whoever, whatever. Who cares?
But our audience, they're eating this stuff up. They love it.
Thor is the only one who starts down here mm-hmm. and ends up here.
Okay.
Okay. He has an arc. He has to find himself. He has to find his faith again. He has whatever you want to call it. He's lost Mjolnir, so he's got to get Stormbringer.
Kudos to just getting that pronounced right.
I don't even know if I pronounced it right, but I'm not
Mjolnir.
No, I'm not doing it again because that'll ruin it, right? So, and then he comes back to the end of the battle triumphantly.
Yeah.
You know, most triumphantly, almost. And then he screws up again because we need another movie. But
it's true.
But he's the only one with an arc in the entire story.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that just him alone was the only one to get close enough to kill Thanos doesn't really upset the story.
Right.
So if it comes down to Captain Marvel, mm-hmm. it's not really going to bother me too much.
Yeah. I'm going to agree with you. I think Avengers moves on. I think that the final game that I was kind of worried about actually has a lot of depth to it based on the conversation we just had, right? So first of all, bing, Avengers moves on in our final bracket. So if you're streaming us on Facebook.com/Secrets of the Sire or YouTube.com/Secrets of the Sire. By the way, please subscribe to us on YouTube. Every subscription helps. We're trying to really build this channel up. We're doing a nice job of it. The numbers.
Call to action. Call to action.
The numbers might not suggest that, but compared to where we were last, just even 6 months ago with the YouTube channel, we thank you guys for coming on board.
Like and subscribe.
We're getting comments too, which is awesome. Please, we are fiends for this stuff, so we will write you back and tell you why you're wrong directly in the comments section, as Brian Abraham can attest.
Oh boy. always causing trouble.
But if you're on there, so you see that we've advanced into the brackets. It's Avengers versus Doctor Strange as the Avengers Endgame bracket final. And I think this is interesting now because Doctor Strange to me now, as I'm thinking about it, because he planted the seed in Infinity War, might be the most important character with the most important role. And therefore, you really need to have seen that movie. I think you could go into that. I think you could go into Endgame having seen Doctor Strange and Infinity War, and you'd be just fine versus if you don't see Doctor Strange versus seeing Avengers and then seeing Endgame.
I disagree.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. What a shock. No, but Avengers deals with the invasion. But it wasn't an invasion by Thanos. It just kind of it's the precursor invasion. It's the invasion before the invasion. Mm-hmm. You could argue Age of Ultron is more important, which we did because they actually went off against each other, is more important. But again, we didn't get to argue whether or not Age of Ultron was more important to Endgame than the original Avengers. Because Age of Ultron introduced Vision. And Vision plays a crucial role. Now, it wasn't up to us to move Avengers Age of Ultron ahead in the bracket. It was up to you guys, and you guys voted Avengers. But I could argue that's a more important movie than the original Avengers, because the original Avengers just shows them all kind of getting together. Age of Ultron introduces the Infinity Stone with Vision, and Vision playing such a crucial role. And then likewise, Doctor Strange, same thing. I don't know, man. Convince me. Convince me, why is Avengers, aside from the reasons you gave in general leading up to this, more important than Doctor Strange?
Like I said again, oh, well, you don't want this same.
Well, I like the argument. It's a valid argument. I'm just wondering, is there anything you can throw on directly if you were to take Doctor Strange? Analyze Doctor Strange a second. On a scale of 1 to 10, how important is it to Avengers Endgame? Like the world of Doctor Strange. Is the world of Doctor Strange,
no,
the sorcery world important to Avengers
Endgame? It's a maybe three or four.
Right. Okay.
Scale 1 to 10.
So I'll give Avengers.
Here's what does it if you're talking about story, if you're talking about the essentialness of story, sure, and the essentialness. Tony Stark and Pepper Potts are in the park. And
yeah.
He's about to, you know. Well, he's talking about her, you know, they're talking about their engagement, they're, you know,
mm-hmm,
prepared to get married.
Yep.
And Doctor Strange comes out of a hole in reality,
mm-hmm,
and says, "Hey, I'm Stephen Strange." That's it. That's all you need. There was no pre-established relationship between Doctor Strange and any of the Avengers. So this basically is the introduction of Doctor Strange to the Avengers.
Okay.
If you're looking at it from the perspective of the Avengers,
yeah.
Anything that they asked him, any information that they established,
right,
in that movie, will do as information enough to get us through that film.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Stephen Strange, refers to himself as a master of the mystic arts.
Yeah.
And that kind of stuff. So he gives some kind of information. So Doctor Strange is just backstory. It's useful content. It's a wiki at this point. It's useful content if you want to know more about exactly what is behind Doctor Strange's powers.
Yeah.
But because his introduction, because we're seeing his introduction to the Avengers through the eyes of the Avengers, we don't need to have him pre-established before he shows up.
Okay, but
it's good that we do have it, but we don't need it.
But I mean, what about the? I'm trying to think back to Doctor Strange. The Infinity Stones themselves played such a crucial role in that, but
any more or less
than other films? I'm wondering.
No, not really. And again,
I don't think so either.
In Infinity War, they establish it's an Infinity Stone. You know, they established that's where the bulk of his powers have come from. They established that it's protected with a spell. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, there's a lot of information on Doctor Strange in that film.
Yeah.
So it's one of those situations where if you miss that movie, you could watch Infinity War and still pretty much be on board with who Doctor Strange is.
Mm-hmm.
But if you wanted to know more, there is a Doctor Strange movie you could go back and watch that's in canon and that will help you to understand it even more.
Yeah. I think all these are valid. I think, without a doubt, I think we're going to make Pat Shand a very happy man. Yeah. We're going to declare Avengers the most important film you need to see before Endgame, even though Infinity War is pretty darn important because it's a part one. But honestly, all you need to know going into Avengers Endgame is that Thanos won. And you're going to get that whether you see Infinity War or not. You could literally pick up Endgame where you left off without having left off anywhere and kind of, I think, jump right into it as well, too, knowing that, okay, Thanos is the bad guy. Thanos beat us all, and this is it. And if you wanted to go back, you could see how it is. So the resolution of the story, though, is going to be the resolution of the original Avengers, which I think at the heart of it is what this is all about. All right, this has been our 2019 March Madness bracket. It's been very exciting. I'll add crowd noise to this somehow. It's very exciting. And it was a lot of fun. It was always a lot of fun. I want to thank Darren Sanchez for loaning us his name. Jeff Gomez and Fabian Nicieza, same thing. Bevan from Adultish. And Mr. Pat Chan, whose bracket is officially, bing, declared the winner. I guess I shouldn't mess up our curse word, bing, with our winner, bing. So,
yeah.
Come up with something.
Don't confuse us.
We don't want to confuse the two. Real quick before we go to break, predictions on Avengers Endgame. We're going to do a very big preview for it coming up, but real quick, out of all of the movies we talked about, which characters do you see having the biggest impact coming into Avengers Endgame when all is said and done?
That's a genuine question for right now?
Yeah, I'm asking right now.
Captain America.
Yeah.
Definitely the Hulk and Iron Man. I think it's going to be those three.
I think it's fair. Even though we're getting a heavy dose of Ant-Man and a heavy dose of Hawkeye in the trailers leading up, but I think it's ultimately my wish fulfillment for Avengers Endgame. And again, we'll do a big preview episode in a couple weeks. Captain America squaring off against Thanos, mano a mano, hand to hand. How about that?
Mano a mano is man to man.
It's not really. Is it? I don't know. I took Spanish a long time ago. But yeah, I want to see this all coming down to the very end, those two characters squaring off. All right. When we come back, we've got best-selling author Amanda Rose on to talk about the perils of sci-fi publishing, her first con experience. She was a con virgin up until Toronto a couple weeks ago. And more. We'll see you then.
Hi, everyone. This is Michael Dolce, host of the Secrets of the Sire radio show and podcast, and welcome to our Patreon launch event. To date, we've interviewed actor Kevin Bacon and rocker Chris Cornell. We spent a wacky week with a Real Housewife and played Love It or Shove It with a comic book icon. We've debated which TV shows everyone should be watching and channeled our inner force comparing Rogue One to The Force Awakens. And that's just the beginning. Become an executive producer and get an exclusive feed inside our studio before and while we air. Become a program director and receive our exclusive show outline with insider details on topics and guests hours before we go live. Or just be a fan, and for a quarter of broadcast, we'll sing your praises on the interwebs every week. So if you like pop culture, movies, TV shows, and graphic novels, this is the Patreon page for you.
Welcome back to Secrets of the Sire. We do this every Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern on the Sire Studios Digital Network. I am excited to be joined by Amanda Rose, a wonderfully talented entrepreneur, author, marketer. She has a book out right now, The Fire Fury Saga, Fire Fury Freedom. Amanda, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Really excited. I'm glad we got connected here. Talk first about your book. What's it about? How does it relate to what we talk about, which is, you know, sci-fi, comics, movies, TV, pop culture? It's all kind of, you know, one giant blanket. So how does your book relate to it, and what's it about?
Yeah, it's something I'm always really excited to talk about. My first book, which is the prequel in the series, Fire, Fury, Freedom, I was really inspired in my teens, especially. I always loved the Final Fantasy series. So that was one thing that was like kind of my launching point.
Sure.
The nugget of the idea. So in my book, we've got the planet is at the point of the brink of decay with global warming. We've got this massive corporation which is taken over as government, and then this mercenary troop that goes out to save the world. So they're against the elements and against this company and this whole great military sci-fi. Will they even survive till the end of the book, kind of?
Sure. Well, we won't give that away.
Yeah, you got to read to find out. So that was a really fun setup for the series. And then the series starter, humanity's been in space for like 200 years, their ships started to fall apart, never found a planet that's been good for colonization, and things are starting to get desperate, and then they make the discovery that changes everything, which I won't give away what that is, but it's kind of like Mass Effect meets Star Wars.
Okay. Oh, that's see, you've got your marketing hat on immediately, which I think is fantastic. Talk to us about the route you took to get these books published. You know, they're independently published, self-published. Something that when we first had our initial conversations was kind of like, you know, years ago, 20 years ago, it's like, oh, you couldn't get a publisher. Now it's not just a smart idea. I feel like it's the idea, like the way to go, period.
Yeah, I would fully agree with that. And before I got into self-publishing, I had talked to a lot of authors about it. And so many of them had gone with like traditional publishers, and I should specify they went with middle range publishers, which is different than going with, you know, HarperCollins or something like that. And I think the thing that I really took away from talking to them was they lost some creative control. The end product wasn't exactly what they'd hoped for.
Sure.
And then on top of that all, the publisher dropped the marketing in their lap. So, and that's the one people want when they go with a publishers for the for the marketing to be taken over. So I'm like, take your hand out of the cookie pot then. I'll figure it out.
You know, I wonder if 20 years ago they did do more marketing for you, or they had the budgets to do it. But I feel like, especially with the, you know, kind of like the music industry, same thing, like these record companies have now been stripped of their power, which is one, in one way is great. Hey, more people can kind of do what they want to do. But on the back end, it's also like, well, they don't have the money to invest in a writer. Like, you need to come to them with a following, which is kind of strange, right? I mean, I think every author is goes through this, right?
Yeah, it's kind of a really weird awakening. And I think this is just part of the technology age that we're in.
Yeah.
Marketing is different. I mean, we're so tired of, I mean, who even watches TV with commercials anymore? It's world. I mean, we're like, oh, you know, I'm either going to, you know, watch it on the TV and like pause the ads or fast forward them, or I'm on Netflix. So it's, we're in a different world, which I think is a great thing, because it's opened up the door for the little guy. And even consumers want to buy from the little guy now. So like you said, like 20 years ago, it was like, oh, you couldn't get a publisher. Like it was, it was like this, like you poor thing.
Right.
And now it's, I mean, indie books are a third of the market. So it's nothing to, you know, shake a stick at or whatever the old, I don't know why that's saying.
So a lot of folks that watch our show or listen to our show or download it, they're aspiring writers themselves. We're obviously creators ourselves as well. Hassan and I both work in the graphic novel field. Hassan also is an author. Tell us all your secrets right now. Just share them all. Just give us the fast track. No, yeah. give us like a point or two that you kind of came across for aspiring folks that want to jump into the self-publishing world.
Yeah, and I think the main thing that I want to push here is jump in, because for me, I mean, when I wrote Fire, Fury, Freedom, it then sat on my computer for 14 years. and then it finally hurt too much to look at it on there anymore that I have to take some action. And I see that happen with everybody. And then
it happens now. It happens with me. It's crazy. Go on. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's like, it is. It's one of these things where we just like sit on it, and really to make any kind of action of any dream come true, I mean, we got to take that leap of faith and get it out there.
Yep.
And, you know, we always hear, especially from people who aren't authors yet, there's all of these concerns about like plagiarism and blah, 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 freedom. And it's, there are authors who give away their stuff for free because they try and get it out there. Now, I'm not an advocate of that. I truly believe and you can make money at it, and I'm living at it too, and a good living at that if you learn the marketing skills.
Do you give some away though?
I will do promotions, and I will do the odd thing where if I'm promoting a new book, sometimes if you know, people
like
buy
a chapter or something like that.
Yeah, like so I don't mind giving like a little bit away to like try for free or like as a prize, like you know, enter my contest and you can like win a signed copy or something, like I'll do that kind of thing. I always think that kind of marketing strategy is good and it's fun for everybody.
Yeah.
But I'm not a big fan of just free work out there. Because you put a lot of time and effort and value into it. There's a lot of pre-work that goes into getting a book done, like not just your time, but you got to pay for your cover editor, your editing. You might want to buy somebody to do the copyright part. Script's so much different than content writing.
Right.
So, you know, for the average book, the monetary investment's probably between $1,000 to $2,000, not to mention all of the endless hours that go into actually creating it. So I do believe in putting a lot of value into what you put out there and, you know, stand behind it, you know, get behind that work. So I think for the marketing technique aspect of it, once you get your work out, the thing that I found to be consistently the best investment is pay-per-click advertising. Amazon or BookBub or I know Goodreads is doing it now. Goodreads is, it's beta, it's okay, it's getting better. But definitely Amazon and BookBub have been really good return on investment.
Yeah, it's funny too. A lot of people in the industry, it's funny, in the comic book world, in terms of Facebook ads, I know the cost per click is actually so low because so many creators kind of like dip their toe, like literally just their toe, and not anything. And they don't really dive in with any of the pay-per-click. They'll do an ad for a week. It won't do anything. And they'll be like, well, it didn't work. And then they kind of like get out of it. Is that something that you kind of had to brace yourself for, that it's a more of a marathon to do pay-per-click than it is a sprint?
Yeah, it's definitely something where you want to be in for the long haul. And the way that these algorithms work on pay-per-click advertising is the longer it's going, generally the better it will do, and will actually lower the cost per click the longer you stay with it. So, you know, it's kind of, you know, brace yourself for, you know, that first month. And you can set all of your caps too. I mean, you can say, like, I don't want to spend more than $5 on this ad per day.
Yeah.
So it's not outrageous by any means. It's something that, you know, you can adjust it to your budget, but when you let it go for a while, you're going to end up earning so much more than you put out. And it's also a tax write-off. Marketing.
It's true. Absolutely.
Yeah. With a book, I mean,
there are so many creators that don't even like they don't even like they're not even writing their miles like driving to and from the bookstore. It's like, no, dude, there's this whole like business end of things where you can actually, but you have to approach it. Now, how do you do that? How do you differentiate the business end of being creative with the creative end? Because that's something that took me a long time. It took me a long time to justify in my head. You know, when you get in, you're in college, you're like, well, no, man, I'll never sell out. You know, I'll work this day job until I have a full, you know, until this thing takes off. But then, you know, it wasn't until maybe 5 years ago where I'm like, wait a minute, why am I even spending time making money in something I don't want to do instead of something I do want to do? And that's when it flipped for me. Like, how do you balance the creative and the business?
Yeah. And I think that's one of the most important things we can even talk about today. Mm-hmm. Because the broke artist mentality is detrimental. And I know for me, that was something that I struggled with for a really long time. You know, I went to college for acting, for film and TV, mm-hmm. and everybody and their monkey's uncle was like, so what's your day job going to be? And as much as I wanted to claw the eyeballs out, it definitely got And guess what? I was broke as sin for years, and I couldn't even make ends meet. It was like, oh, I need to get groceries. Well, here's more credit card debt this month. Okay, great.
Yeah,
it was that bad, and it was like that for years. And I think that's part of the entrepreneurial growth journey is learning that you can make money doing what you love. You can make more money doing what you love than mm-hmm. the soul crap job that you hate. And it's a lot of having faith in yourself, a lot of learning. You gotta put yourself into the right mindset. So I'm really big on personal growth. I'm constantly mm-hmm. reading books on that kind of thing, listening to podcasts, anything. I love the book Secrets of the Millionaire Mind by T. Harv Eker. I definitely throw that out there as a must read for anybody who needs to break that bridge, because it's getting your mind to go from like broke and trying to like, and make things work, even though we have to take the big scary leap to make the dream come to life. And it will, it's just, we have to take that step, and it's hard. So you got to get your mind right for it.
Yeah, I agree. Now you have a new book out that's kind of on this topic, the Manifesting Money book. Want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. It's funny. I write so many different styles and genres. And actually, I think that's something I'll just quickly touch on here is mm-hmm. You don't have to box yourself in when you go in author. I've had a lot of people who are like, oh, well, I've got an idea for a mystery, but then I always wanted to write a romance. And I'm like, well, you could do both. Right.
Yeah.
You don't have to be like, I'm this author. Like, you can do a lot. So yeah, I've got a series on manifestation and mindset, personal development. I've got a cookbook coming out in a couple weeks. And then I've got classic literature and then science fiction. So, I mean, really, like, sky's the limit for variety pack.
That's great.
I think it's interesting because you end up getting people coming from different genres, because as human beings, we're multi-passionate. So
sure.
Read my sci-fi book and then be like, oh, I'm totally into Law of Attraction. Let me check this book out. Happens all the time.
Sure.
Crossover. With manifesting money, one of the things I wanted to put out there, particularly for entrepreneurs, or even people who are like, I want to live my dream but are so scared to do it, is how do you do things financially, both in your mindset, but also, you know, how do you do investments? How do you create passive income? How do these things work together? Because I feel like that's one of the things that most of us don't know. Mm-hmm. We've heard of passive income unicorn, but we're not sure.
They exist. They're real.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I wanted to get that out there and be like, yeah, you can do this. And is it work? Yeah. I mean, passive income, it's working for free for a while and then earning money residually for a really long time.
I always call it the dad test, right? My dad was always like, where are you getting paid? Are you doing something? Are you getting paid on this? Are you, you know, why are you doing a radio show? Are you getting paid on it? I'm like, well, not yet, but you know, if I do it consistently, it will build up to something. Well, but you got to get paid. You know, you got to make sure you're always got, you know, you always got to have that paycheck. And that's the dad test for me, but it's not the right way to think. You're actually investing in the long term.
Yeah. And I mean, that's the way that you, it's funny because we never take the moment to step back and go, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I just go off of my working income hourly. I will never never be able to get rich. Never. Yep. It will be literally stuck to it forever. And I think once we actually take that moment and realize that, then we're like, oh, okay, well, I need to have other income sources. And especially, exactly. We live in a really dynamic time where, job security isn't what it was 50 years ago.
Right. It's,
companies crumble, go under, small businesses are popping up everywhere.
Yep.
It's a lot different. We're just in a different economy right now. So having multiple streams of income is so important. And then learning how to invest that money once you have it so it grows for you. So, and then you can do all the fun things you want, like being an author. And marketing for being an author. So.
That's right. That's all good. It all works together. Now, you popped your convention cherry this past 2 weeks ago at Toronto Comic Con. How was it? What was your con experience like?
It was amazing. And it was, I don't want to say it's not what I expected, but it was, there's always things like you don't plan for when it's the first time you do something. So I had done a bunch of book signing events at bookstores leading up to this. So I was prepared from that point of view. But we ended up, I shared a table with another author, and we ended up getting a table in Artist Alley. So we weren't near any other authors, which wasn't necessarily a bad thing.
No, it's not.
I think it actually made us stand out a little bit, but we were around all anime. Not necessarily, again, a bad thing, because anybody who was actually looking for sci-fi at that convention was like, oh my God, thank you. Like when they found us, which was good. But I think maybe next time I would plan to be in a different location.
Okay.
Definitely was not prepared for standing on concrete floors all day. I'm used to sitting at bookstores because you have a different layout. But when you're in Artist Alley, like nobody can see you because everybody's got these things that go up for 10 feet next to you. So you're like, you have to stand up. So that was interesting. Got really good at my elevator pitch.
Good.
Got at my author friend's elevator pitch because we heard it too many times. which was really funny because we were handing out bookmarks the whole time.
Yeah.
And my friend, every time he sent it out, he'd do the hammy joke. It's made of real cardboard. And the girl got so tired of hearing it, she ended up like drawing an anime picture of him doing that.
You're going to always have that. My booth mate is like, I miss hearing you talk about your book over and over and over and over again. It was like our first convention we had done together in a long time. Real quick, we've got about 30 seconds. Tell everyone where they can find you and what the latest projects, where they can find that too.
Yeah, absolutely. Best places to find me are Facebook and Instagram. I'm on there all the time. Just look for the handle Amanda Rose Author. Mm-hmm. And specifically for the Fire Fury Saga, at Fire Fury Saga, make it easy.
Making it very, very easy. Amanda, thank you so much for joining us. Really, really appreciate it. And when we come back, we go spinning the racks. Welcome back to Secrets of the Sire. We do this every Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern on the Sire Studios Digital Network. Talk comics, movies, TV, and pop culture. I want to thank our guest again, Amanda Rose. You can check out her book, which is Fire, Fury, and Freedom, the Fire Fury Saga, on Amazon. Just do a search for that. And go check her up on Facebook, facebook.com/AmandaRoseFireFury. So thank you again. All right, we do this every week. We go spinning the racks.
Spin the rack, spin that rack.
First Star Wars Episode 9 poster revealed. This is actually from our friend, Mr. Chris Arendt, but this time coming from space.com, unless they just took it from Newsarama. Star Wars Episode 9, an image purported to be a poster, is floating around on the interwebs. The site we got it from was space.com, and Games Radar picked it up here. That's right, C-3PO with a bowcaster, Red Jedi, and a whole lot more.
Red Stormtrooper.
Red Stormtrooper.
Oh,
Red Stormtrooper.
What poster is that?
Well, it's that secret one that only Sire Studios has. So a whole bunch of cool stuff, Hassan. Real or fake? That's the first question on everybody's mind.
Oh, look, it could be fake. It could be totally fake, or it could be a put on by J.J. Abrams. But the poster looks real.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't. I've seen fan posters. I've seen thousands of fan posters. Uh-huh. Thousands. And this doesn't. This has a lot of nuances.
Uh-huh.
That actual standard posters have. Now, is it the final poster? Probably not.
Yeah.
You know, like episode 7 had 2-3 posters.
Yeah.
Had one poster done by Drew Seldon, you know, that they didn't use.
All right.
And then they had that major
show.
One. No, Drew Struzan. Not Drew Seldon.
Oh, much different.
That was my fault.
That was your mistake.
Also, just as an aside, Mano and Mano is actually hand in hand. Whoops.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
That was my fault. That was why I take responsibility. I don't know Spanish.
I am bookmarking this episode.
I am
forever.
Not Spanish.
Yeah.
I don't have a Spanish bone in my body. That's... So
there's a joke there.
But
somewhere.
Anyway. Yeah.
So you're not the only one that
so
thinks...
Drew Struzan did a poster.
Uh-huh.
They did another major poster for episode 7 for
okay.
The Force Awakens. They did the two posters for The Last Jedi. They did the red poster, and they also did the poster with Kylo and
right.
And Luke and Rey in the middle.
Okay.
You know. So I think this is an official poster.
Okay.
I don't think it's the poster for the movie.
All right.
That's
well,
my attitude.
Someone disagrees with you. Recently, a supposedly leaked poster for the movie made its way to the subreddit Star Wars Leaks, where many subscribers claimed it was legit. One fan wanted to know what Mark Hamill, Luke Skywalker himself, thought about it. He obliged. I'm pretty sure that's just the wonderful work of a passionate fan. Case closed. Most fans would take the wise Jedi Master at his word, but the Indie Revolver Twitter account stood its ground, whereupon Hamill turned up the shade meter. C-3PO would look pretty silly toting around Chewbacca's crossbow and bandolier, especially since the beloved Wookiee is on the poster as well, holding his crossbow and wearing his signature bandolier. But Indie Revolver would not be silenced and reminded us all just how important they are to the world of breaking Star Wars news. Of course, Mark Hamill isn't going to confirm any leak before Disney has had a chance to properly advertise it. Star Wars Celebration kicks off April 11th. It's in Chicago, which is actually a pretty cool venue in general. So,
Where is it?
It's going to be at the McCormick Place, I believe.
Wow.
Yeah.
No.
So. Yeah.
No. Wait. No. Which place is that? I'm sorry.
That's the convention. Well, that's the convention center in Chicago. A quick little search could probably find that, but.
Because isn't it Rose? The one where was the Wizard Chicago Con?
That was Donald D. Stevens. So I can't imagine. I can't imagine that's that. No, I would imagine that.
What was it called though? What was that convention hall called though? It was Rose something?
That's Rosemont, and that's the Donald
Rosemont.
E. Stevens. Yeah, Rosemont. I don't think it's there either. I think it's in downtown Chicago. I saw posters of it when I was out in C2E2. I don't think this is at all of any interest to anybody listening to our podcast. So
here's what they want.
With that, I'm gonna say thank you again to our guest. Thank you to Hassan for doing an amazing job on this MCU March Movie Madness bracket. Next week, we are previewing Shazam. No, sorry, we're reviewing Shazam. We were going to preview it. That's our preview.
Yeah, basically. It comes out this week, so we better review it.
I am excited. I am, like, thrilled. I am really curious to know if this is the next Aquaman or the next Batman v Superman. We're going to give you our take next week.